Someone save temptation, please remember me as in the dream. We had as rug burned babies among the fallen trees and fast asleep beside the lions and the ladies that call you what you'd like and even might give a gift for your behavior, a fleeting chance to see a trapeze swing as high as any savior. But please remember me, my misery, and how it lost me all I wanted. Those dogs that love the rain and chasing trains, the colored birds above their running in circles round the world where it spells on the wall behind St. Peter in black and cinder gray and spray paint. Who the hell can see forever? Please remember me. Seldomly in the car behind the carnival, my hand between your knees, you turned from me. You said the trapeze act was wonderful, but never meant to last. The clown that passed saw me just come up with anger, and it filled circus dogs, the parking lot had an element of danger. Please remember me, finally, and all my uphill clawing, my dear. And if I make the pearly gate, do my best to make a drawing of God and Lucifer, a boy and girl, an angel kissing on a sinner, a monkey and a man, a marching band, all around the frightened trapeze swinger.
to spread the enlightenment of love, compassion, and humanity to those who are not touched by its light. I stand to protect and focus myself in the betterment of my fellow being. We are brothers and sisters, each and every one. I promise to love my enemy and never become that which is not God. I dedicate my spirit in the service of what is good and fair. Will never be stomped out. I am dedicated.
Show just keeps on rolling. Gunnar here, Steel City Music. My next guest is possibly he could be my son. I don't know. We're both terribly sarcastic to one another. We laugh at everything and everybody. Even now, before the interview started, we were crapping on ourselves and his band. But we didn't make fun of Austin because we like Austin, but we didn't crap on Hollowcore. Joining me right now is Dan from Hollowcore. How are you, kid?
Hello, I'm good. I didn't realize I was your son, but it makes sense.
It does, because I think I've somehow adopted your band because, when you guys were back in the day where you could actually sit in the same room with someone and not worry about getting COVID, you guys came up and we had a laugh and we were dying laughing. I was. And then last week I was chatting with Austin for the Hamilton Underground stuff, and him and I talked for hours, but the interview, what I put on the air and the actual stuff that we talked about were two separate things, you know. So, because I just spent so much time laughing with him, and then every time I've talked to you, it's just like, you know, you telling me stories about, you know, how you suffer from diarrhea, and it's just so weird, right? You know, and yeah, but yet everybody in your band and your girlfriend is very nice. It's been very supportive of you in that matter. But I mean, we're not really here to talk about, you know, that. You know,
the bowels, yeah,
the bowel thing, which is what happened to us last time. We're going to move on to a new album, are we not, sir?
The debut Hollowcore EP.
Yeah, when did this start getting recorded? When did you guys, what studio, when did you guys start putting this together?
So the songs, all of the songs on the EP were written before 2020. So the band got together in like, I don't know, maybe September 2019, and all the songs were kind of finalized by December.
Right.
And then in March, we jumped into the studio. It was our friend Mike Julian. His basement studio. He recorded us and he took over like producing, mixing, mastering. He did a great job. So we started recording in March and then COVID hit. So we had kind of like some parts of the songs recorded in March and April, and then we had to wait a bit, and then we finished around maybe July and August, finished recording them, and then he started working on like mixing, mastering, making everything have like similar mixes, because we had put a single out, Buried at the Crossroads, back in I think it was like May, so that had like a decent mix, but then he just kind of like updated that to match like the rest of the EP, so now the EP has like a more cohesive mix to everything.
Julian, from what band does he work with again?
Rival Town.
That's what it is. That's what it is. Yeah, because Austin was talking about that. Because this same track is on the Hamilton Underground that you can buy to help support the venues and some charities around town here.
Yeah. So Mike, he produced and mixed it, but then on that track, Pure Life, Mike actually sang a verse and he does some backups in the chorus with Austin.
tell me about Camp Crystal. Now, of course, it's Halloween, and I see the track Camp Crystal, and I'm always thinking about, you know, Michael or Jason from Friday the 13th. What is this song about?
So it turns out Austin wrote the script to Friday the 13th years before that movie came out. and they stole it from us, I guess, because it's his own completely original concept. the timing works out great for that one.
Right. 'Cause,
yeah, that's essentially the plot of the song. It's based around that.
Yeah.
The murders and stuff.
You a big fan of the movie?
I've actually never seen it, but, like, I know about it.
What is this? What do you mean you've never seen Friday the 13th, bud?
I'm a piece of garbage, honestly.
I don't want to start internet rumors. I read enough about you. But you've actually never seen Friday the 13th?
No, I haven't. I definitely should, though. In the spirit of Halloween.
In the spirit of the song. And, you know, yeah, that you recorded it, you know, and you've already dumped on Austin about this already. So why don't we spin that track right now?
Sure, yeah.
my guest is Dan from Hollow Core, new EP out, we're just spinning. We just spun a couple of the tracks. You heard "Buried at the Crossroads" earlier, a newer version of it. Also, Mike Julian on vocals with "Too Pure for Life," and you just heard the Camp Crystal song, which is based on the script that actually Austin wrote well before Friday the 13th came out, and they ripped him off, according to Dan. Tell me about this, just on the side here. Tell me about this attitude that your band has, that you guys just don't care.
So it's not that we don't care, because if anything, we care like so much. We're always trying to stay like present and always have things going, make sure people know we're alive. But we find that, like, I don't know, a lot of bands are just like posting their stuff, but we're just having fun with it, because at the end of the day, this is all like supposed to be something we enjoy. So
yeah,
instead of being like always serious with our posts, we're like, whatever, if we have something silly, like, we're silly guys, so like, you know, people might relate to that we're just enjoying it. Like, we're making music and we're serious about it, but we still have fun with it. Like,
yeah, because I've read people who get their backs up when a band will make a statement about something. I'm like, what, how can they say something like that? And I think you guys wrote something like, "We're the greatest band ever in our own minds," or something.
Yeah, that is not to be taken seriously at all. And sometimes when I see our bios say that, I'm like, oh, people might take that as like, oh, we're being like,
I don't,
douchey or
I don't
talky.
Yeah, I don't. I just think that's hilarious when someone writes something like that.
Yeah,
you know.
Sometimes I try to change it to say like, oh, we're the most royal band of legendary friggin' people or something.
Hey man, so we got there's two songs left on this EP, "Four Fish," featuring Christina Licatalosi. Am I close? Was I?
Pretty close, Licatalosi.
Licatalosi. Did you get her just so people would trip up trying to say her name, or how do you know her?
Yeah, I think just like finding someone with a big name and putting it on the most simple name for a song, "Fish" featuring so I went to high school with her, so she's been a good friend for like 8 years now, and she's like a musical theater student, and we've been in some musical stuff together. And then I also think Austin had done some musical theater stuff, not from school, but through like Theater Ancaster or something, like years before. And so he was like, he had the idea for having like a female vocalist on "Fish," because the whole idea of the song is like a mermaid with her siren song, like that whole Greek thing. So I asked her, and she does some background vocals on it, and it sounds like super like siren-y, like this female's like calling out to you, and it's all like wavy and water related. We'll be right back.
Are you guys generally happy with what you have here in this EP, or do you think there was like some room for improvement on stuff?
At the moment, I think we're super stoked on it. Like, I don't know what I would change on it. I don't know if anyone else does. Maybe in a few years we'll change our minds, but we think like what Mike did to it was like amazing. Like the mix sounds so full, and like he just brought it to life. And then in the recording process, he would like throw out ideas and we'd go back and forth with ideas. So I think we've got like just a beautiful culmination of everything we've been working towards. Like, I think we're all happy with it.
Is there any talk of doing another EP with Mike, or do you want to take an attempt at an LP, even though we are in the middle of the stupid COVID thing?
So in terms of marketing, we think it's probably better to go with like EPs, because people a lot of the times don't want to sit down and listen to a full album. Some people might not even listen to the full EP. They might only click like one track. Mm-hmm. Personally though, I'm a fan of full albums. We've talked about doing concept albums in the future, but who knows how far away that'll be. Like, Austin has a bunch of story ideas for that stuff, so I'd be personally be down to write an album. In terms of going with Mike though, I think we definitely would want to go with Mike again, because like, it just, we really think it sounds incredible, like what he was able to do just in his basement studio. Hey, it's Dan from Holocore. We just released our new EP, Turning Point. It's available on Spotify, Apple Music, SoundCloud, Bandcamp, YouTube. Anywhere where music is, we're on there. Check it out. We'll be right back.
This is The Hawk, 101.5 FM, Hamilton's alternative.
Hey, my next guest is a really cool dude at Hamilton, Ontario. I've known him for about 37,000 years, it seems like, in and out of Hamilton in different projects, whether it be music or film. And very rarely do we actually get a chance to connect and chat about what he's up to. But this time, I'm going to make this happen. Nathan Fleet is on the line with me right now, and we're going to chat about Hamilton Film Festival, which comes up November 7th to the 15th, here, of course, in the Hammer. Nathan, thanks for taking the time out to chat with me, buddy.
Oh, happy to do so. Great to be talking to you today.
Just to let you know, years ago, Darren Laidman said, you know Nathan, and I looked at you and went, yeah, I know Nathan, I just don't know why I don't see him. Like, it's like, ever since I've met you, you've been one of the guys who's never been idle. You're always doing something, and I guess this is the culmination of all your hard work. It's the 15th anniversary of the Hamilton Film Festival. Tell us about the festival, how it got started, and what it's up to this year.
Yeah, the roots go back to the amazing Staircase Theater many, many moons ago. Even before it was called the Hamilton Film Festival, the Staircase Theater was operating as a movie theater. And, you know, this goes back to the, you know, early millennium and even, you know, in the late 90s when film screenings weren't accessible the way they are now. Right. So if you wanted to be play in a movie theater, you had to be on film or you had to have these 3/4-inch beta tapes that you would send out to these festivals and everything. There was nowhere you could actually get your stuff screened. So Hugh and Kathy at the Staircase put in this LCD projector. They had a VHS machine and a DVD player. And they welcomed the community to go in and play their movies. And this was, you know, at the time, this was not a normal thing. This was very difficult to actually get screenings that way. And, you know, I got involved taking tickets for some of their film events. And then one day we sat down, we thought, hey, why don't we, you know, get a legitimate film festival going? And we said, let's call it the Hamilton Film Festival. And that was that. This was before Hamilton was cool. But, you know, before it was cool to put Hamilton's name on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
how did that feel doing something like that for the first time? Put together a film festival. What were the challenges back then? Aside from the technology of what you just said.
Yeah.
What else was the challenges that you faced getting this? You guys getting this going?
Well, one of the motivations on my end was that I always had to go to Toronto to see a panel discussion on film, to learn about filmmaking, or to watch indie films. I'd get on the GO bus and I'd go down there and I'd watch this stuff. So in my head, I'm like, I don't want to have to do this anymore. Like, why can't we just do this here? So the main challenge was finding local filmmakers. And there weren't that many around that were visible. Like you said, you know, like going out to look for filmmakers, like where were they? Because there was no film scene here.
Yeah.
So it was very difficult to find some of those people. So I, you know, between the Staircase and myself, we just kind of looked within our reach. Okay, who's got a movie that we can show? And it was VHS and DVD in the first year and very little else. So it was all local. And then, you know, the year after that, you know, a couple people from Toronto had heard about it and started coming our way. And this was through, like, press. So there's no, you know, we didn't have a, we weren't sending things out through the internet or anything. There was no online submission platforms at the time.
Right.
And it was funny because there were Toronto filmmakers that would come our way and they would say, you know what, we can't get our movies played in Toronto, but here you are accepting our films. So the first kind of 3 to 4 years of our festival, we grew because of Toronto filmmakers. Yeah. We were bringing them here because they just couldn't get screenings there. So our first bit of challenge was, you know, trying to find the local, and our biggest boom in the early years was Toronto area filmmakers. Before we actually started to discovering a lot more and connecting the industry, like, locally.
Now, how does that work after the third or fourth year mark? Because you said, you know, the Toronto people, they couldn't get their stuff shown because of other festivals or whatever the critiquing of them or whatever the panels that are put together of this is what we're going to show. At what point did you start seeing this really start to develop for you? Was it the fourth, the fifth year, like as far as like submissions and attendance wise and awareness?
Yeah, for sure the fifth year had a definite boost for us. because by the time we hit year five, we were starting to get to know a lot more of the people in the film community. Mm-hmm. And it was, I don't say that it was easier, but it was definitely less of a challenge to get, sure, you know, a lot of films kind of submitted to us. And so we did see a bump in year five. And then from then on, it was in 2008, which was would have been our third festival, is when I actually took over as the director of the festival.
Sure.
When it first started year one, I was